Soy Power Podcast is a free podcast made possible by the support of our awesome Patreon sponsors. Head to toypowerpodcast.com and see how you can help.
Oh yeah, this is power.
Hello and welcome to Toy Power. This is the podcast where we talk toys and everything pop culture. Hi, I'm Trent, and it's great to have your company today for episode
67.
This week on Toy Power, I've got Frank with me.
Hello.
And Darren.
Hello, one and all. Thank you for joining us.
And in this episode, we're going to touch on a little bit of news. It's probably not going to be as in-depth as our last week's news segment, but there is a fair bit of stuff that we do want to talk about. And then we're going to get into our movie review, which is Deadpool 2.
3, 2, 1.
Cue music.
So what have you got for me?
I'm Batman.
But she's got a new hat.
So, we'll start off, Darren, with you. We've probably got some fairly sad news to start this episode off on.
Absolutely. So sad news broke during the week that Margot Kidder, who played Lois Lane in 4 Superman films opposite Christopher Reeve, passed away. So I actually had the good fortune of meeting Margot Kidder in 2014 at the Capri Cinema at a special event that was basically like a convention-style meet-and-greet with photos, autographs, a panel-style discussion, and then a screening of the special edition of the 1978 Superman film directed by Richard Donner, starring Christopher Reeve. I found Margot Kidder to be a really charismatic, really engaging person. In person, she really gave some real insights into what it was like working in the entertainment industry and what it was like working on that film in particular, and the sense of concern within the studio that this Superman film, this comic book movie's budget was so high that it couldn't possibly pay for itself, that it was seen as a real risk, and the industry was sort of looking at Warner Brothers at the time and having a bit of a giggle that they'd commit so much money to a film like this, and no one really had high expectations of it until the premiere. And she also spoke about Christopher Reeve both as a person and as a performer, and what it was like when he had his accident and how she found out, and also what it was like for her losing him. And she also spoke about her own mental health battle with bipolar, and she really struck me as someone who was compassionate but strong and gutsy, and someone who really did sort of encapsulate a lot of how we see the Lois Lane characters. So I was really, really impressed and really fortunate to meet her, and would treasure that memory forever.
Yeah, very nicely said.
Yeah, I'd just like to cap that off, I guess, by saying that, you know, everyone at Toy Power would like to express their condolences to Margot Kidder's family, friends, fans, and colleagues. If that wasn't a sad enough note to start on, just the day after that, news broke that Dean Steffen, the head writer of the 2002 He-Man and the Master Universe cartoon from Mike Young Productions, passed away. Yeah, I didn't know Dean Steffen personally, but I was actually, being such a fan, I actually approached him on Facebook and we became Facebook friends, and I really found his posts to be really witty and both amusing and intelligent, really thoughtful person who could really sort of, you know, put a funny slant on some of the most serious situations in the world and really lift your day. So, you know, I know a lot of people are feeling his passing in the fan community, and people that also like, Val Staples and Toy Power's good friend Leanne Hanna, who worked with him through their association with the MV Creations comic, knew him far better than I did. But yeah, I just really like to also say that everyone at Toy Power would like to express their condolences to to Dean's family, friends, colleagues, loved ones, everyone, and also mentioned that he had a career beyond He-Man as well, that included the Smurfs, the 1990s X-Men cartoon, and countless Transformers cartoons. So he's someone who's seeped in television and animation history. So, two legends lost.
Yeah, and I saw a post from James Etock, another friend of Toy Power, who've had on the show previously, but he'd written a very wonderful tribute to Dean. Obviously, I've got to know him and met him at a number of conventions. To your point, Darren, about his sort of sharp wit and quick to come up with a joke, with some of James's comments as well.
Absolutely.
Around there. But, you know, the sadness and loss from the fan community and the people, like you said, Val, Leanne and James that had come across him, was obviously they were certainly feeling it.
Certainly were. And James's post off, much like Val's, was incredibly moving. You know, it was a really nice tribute.
Very good. All right, we might move on to some television news now.
So YouTube Red have announced a second season for their streaming television series sequel, the Karate Kid sequel, Cobra Kai, which reunites Ralph Macchio and William Zabka as rivals Daniel LaRusso and Johnny Lawrence, 34 years after the events of the original Karate Kid film. So congratulations to YouTube. I mean, that only dropped, I think, at the start of May, and they've already commissioned a second season. So, things are looking really promising for that.
Yeah, I was never really sure what to think of this, and it was interesting that YouTube were publishing their own. They're making a big push into their own original content stuff. And look, I've obviously seen the Karate Kid movies. I was never, you know, huge into the mythos, and then I saw the trailer for this series, and I'm like, oh man, that looks amazing. Like, and it, you know, the spin it puts on it, that the Karate Kid's actually the bad guy out of the whole thing, you know, 30 odd years later. So yeah, I'll be very excited that it's got a season two already, and, you know, interesting to see how quickly it drops, and looking forward to sitting down and watching it.
Yeah, absolutely. I reckon it should be a lot of fun. I've happened to have seen the first two episodes and I think it looks really promising.
Oh, nice.
Very good. All right, some Shearer news now. We're starting to get a bit more information on the Netflix series that is going to rejuvenate the Shearer franchise.
Yeah, so just the other day, and it's up on our page for those who haven't seen it, they dropped a new poster with a basically very sort of shadowed out version of Shearer standing on top of a mountain with the power sword held aloft and the big banner that says "A Hero Will Rise." Along with that was a little bit of a blurb from, I think it's Warner Brothers are doing this, yeah. And basically announced the whole, all the cast members. Not a lot of names that jumped out to me. I know one of them was she played Katana actually in the Suicide Squad movie. She's one of the voice actors. But what they also announced was the characters that these guys will be playing, and it was quite I was just amazed at the depth of characters they went into. So obviously Shearer herself, we've got Glimmer, Catra, Bo, Angela, Natossa, Caster Speller.
Woohoo.
These names are amazing. Mimista, Froster.
that's my favorite.
Seahawk, Entraptor, Scorpia, Shadow Weaver, and Hordak.
Yeah.
So going to be interesting to see some, you know, all these characters we haven't seen on the screen for a very long time. And, you know, as you would expect in this kind of a show, there's like, I think, three males amongst all the females there. So great to see, and yeah, looking forward to whenever it drops.
I just want to say one thing before we move on from that. I'm hugely excited about this, but do you know how I found out about the casting today? Just, I've shared this anecdote with our listeners as well as Frank and Trent here.
Yep.
Wasn't through Toy Power, it wasn't through Frank. When I woke up this morning, my mum told me it appeared on her newsfeed because she's liked a couple of He-Man and Shearer Facebook pages that I did not know about, which I just think is awesome. So my mum broke that news to me this morning about the characters that were going to be in, and I'm like, that's just awesome.
Did she regale you with those names like Frank just did in that list?
Pretty similar.
That's impressive.
Yeah, that is.
Kudos to your mum.
Good work.
And incidentally, happiest 70th.
That's
Mrs.
right.
Finn Diddle self.
Yes, happy birthday for yesterday, Mum.
That's right, yeah. A big milestone. That's fantastic. All right, we'll move on to some more animation news, and this might be something that's a little bit more divisive than Shearer, and that is that Thundercats is getting a relaunch by WB Animation. To tell you a little bit more about it, we thought we'd get Lion-O to introduce himself to you.
My name's Lion-O, and I'm the star of a new show called Thundercats Roar. Wait, you don't know what a Thundercat is? Well, let's start small. I'm a Thundercat, and this is my magic slicing stick, Sword of Omens. Give me sight beyond sight.
So, yeah, there you go. It's a magic slicing stick that he has.
This is not a laser sword.
No, either. So already in that, I guess you can get a sense of the tone or the humour that's going to come out in this new animated series. If you haven't already seen the visuals, think Teen Titans Go, because it's essentially the producer from that, or a lot of the same minds behind that from WB. So it is a very, very large departure from what we saw in the original series back in the 1986 and the reboot that we got, which was a departure from the original looks, but the style of animation, or the form of animation, they were, you know, adult-like characters. This has gone to the Powderpuff Girl extreme.
Pretty much.
Of being very, very cartoony. That's all, you know, SpongeBob or...
Adventure Time
exaggerated expressions and the like. Mm. Let's talk a little bit about what it's going to be. So... we're going to feel the magic and hear the roar. The production is currently away on Thundercats Roar, which is the official title, Thundercats Roar, and an all-new animated sci-fi action comedy series from WB. Bustling with over-the-top action and razor-sharp comedy, Thundercats Roar boasts fresh and vibrant character designs, along with dynamic storytelling that promises to reignite the passionate fan base of these iconic characters and introduce the legacy of Thundera to a whole new generation. Thundercats Roar will be coming to Cartoon Network in 2019. You could go online and basically check out a 3-minute behind the scenes video. We're going to get all the classic characters, albeit the animation style has changed significantly. The designs are very accurate to the original 1986 cartoon series. Lion-O will be the leader of the Thundercats. We get Tigra, Panthro, Chitara, Wile E. Kit, and Wile E. Cat. And similar premise to the original series, where they're escaping their homeworld of Thundera, which blows up sort of Krypton style in the original series. Crash land on Earth and come across not only the bizarre mutants, but also their leader, which is the wicked Mum-Ra. Thundercats Roar features talented voices such as Max Mittelman from Justice League Action as Lion-O, and he also plays Wile E. Cat. We've got Erica Lindebeck from DC Superheroes Girls as Chitara and Wile E. Kit. Patrick Seitz from Justice League Action as Tigra, and we've got Mum-Ra, is voiced by... Patrick Seitz from Justice League as Tigra and Mum-Ra, and Chris Jai Alex from Star Wars Battlefront 2 as Panthro. Who's the executive producer? It's Sam Register, from best known for Teen Titans Go as the executive producer. And I think we'll hear from Sam now for some of his comments about what the show is going to be like.
I think that the world that they built lends itself really well to comedy because of how silly and crazy and outlandish some of those ideas are and some of those settings are.
Silly, crazy, and outlandish. And that makes it prime for comedy. I don't know, that was the bit from the interview that probably got me riled up the most. I mean, once I'd calmed myself down from the animation style, which I'll admit is not for me, and like I've said before, I'm not the target audience.
Exactly.
I'm probably the icing on the cake if I get into it and get my kids into it. But that was a really strange way to express it. Everything else I think he said in that interview was pretty much on point.
I agree. Like, I watched that behind-the-scenes clip we're talking about, and it goes for a couple of minutes, and it was, you know, he said all the right things, and he also expressed a real love about the intro. The intro sequence was iconic, and he was very you know, sure about, hey, we need to provide a really, we've got to match that, right? So he gets it. You know, we spoke in our episode about Thundercat saying how good was that intro. But yeah, silly and funny and humorous. Gee, nothing says silly like a bunch of refugees trying to make a living for themselves. Far out. Like, I just, yeah, that was the one part that was just a little bit tone deaf for my liking.
Yeah, and I was having a conversation prior to the recording session with Darren on the way up here. And I sort of, a lot of people go, look, you know, you've just seen a bit of animation. The animation might not be for you, and that this is the modern style. So you've got to just sort of roll with it. But to me, my greatest concern with this style of animation is you cannot tell. I don't think you can tell a deep or mature story with the characters looking like that. I just think it would be, it could be challenging.
Yeah.
You know, like Teen Titans Go. Do they ever try to go deep and explore complex issues?
I can't say I've seen enough of it. And to be honest, the first I saw of Teen Titans Go was actually when we went to San Diego about 3 years ago now. And it was before one of the other panels we were watching, and they said, oh, here's the new Teen Titans Go. And just the reaction in the room, this is, you know, San Diego Comic-Con, where everyone's here, everyone's hyped for nearly everything. And the reaction in the room was just flat. And it was some crazy thing where their heads were swapping onto, you know, different characters' bodies and stuff like that. And whereas the original Teen Titans show, you want to talk about telling mature stories and having gravitas and emotion into it, that's amazing. Teen Titans Go, not so much.
Yeah, so that's my biggest concern, is that I think it's going down that path, which is fine because there's an audience for that. And don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with selecting that audience. But I think it's just a pretty big departure from what's come before it. The bit that works for me with something like Teen Titans Go is you go, well, DC is a huge property. And if you don't like Teen Titans Go, well, you can go back and watch the old Teen Titans show. You can watch Young Justice, or you can go to the director DVD and Blu-ray releases like the Judas Contract with Teen Titans.
There's a lot of mature content.
Yeah, Teen Titans, right? Like, but if you want to go Batman, you've got Batman Ninja that's on at the moment. You can go to the cinema. You can watch. So the problem that I have with this departure for Thundercats is this is all we're going to get. Like, this is all that's going to be in the Thundercats space now on screen. So there's not that, oh, well, don't worry about that. That's not for you. You can watch your more mature version of Thundercats.
That's it.
We're back to the old cartoon series now if we want our Thundercats fix. I'll give it a go, obviously, and see what it's like. But it doesn't look like it's for me, unfortunately. Yeah. And any merchandising that comes out based on these designs is not going to get a cent of my money.
No. I was just about to say, I don't think this style lends itself. As much as there are, like, Adventure Time figures, and look, probably Teen Titan Go figures, not that I've ever researched them, as much as they do exist, I don't think this animation style lends itself very well to, you know, sort of action figure physical products.
Yeah, agreed. Frank, what have you been up to? You've been loading some stuff into computers and making it into physical form?
I have been. I have made we've got a 3D printer at work, and typically they're out in classrooms for kids to use, and for a whole bunch of reasons, we had one in our office, and the boss said, oh, do you want to print something over the weekend? I was like, why not? And so I made my first, hopefully the first of many, but my first little set of 10 mouses from the Ninja Turtles series, scaled in, and I was in a bit of a rush, so I'm very happy I got the scale right, but scaled perfectly to the old school Ninja Turtle figures. And yeah, a whole bunch of mouses rolled off the assembly line, a little bit of a dot of red paint for the eyes, and they've all come up really, really well, I think, in the grey plastic, so no real painting involved. I did a little bit of a photo shoot with them, put some pictures up on our page for those who are interested to see. And yeah, my boss was even saying, he goes, you obviously didn't quite understand what I was doing, he goes, oh, are people interested in this? I said, mate, if I wanted to, there's probably some people who would buy these because they're a heck of a lot cheaper than you'd get the official ones. No articulation, unfortunately. That's just sort of the style that they come with, and all the jaws are closed. But yeah, it was a fun little project to get it all done.
And what would have happened if you typed an extra zero into your sizing chart when you pressed print? And would you have got back into the office and seen a life-size mouser?
Well, what I found really interesting is when I was doing the photo shoot, I thought, oh, let's compare it to the, you know, the official Playmates mouser toys that I've got. And the scale is just all over the shop. I mean, you think of the original sort of wacky...
The wacky action.
It's the size of a turtle. The ones from the 2003 cartoon are actually quite good, but they're a bit chunkier. Then there's the giant mouser. Then there's the Mondo mousers.
Nickelodeon did some.
The Nickelodeon ones, they're pretty good.
They're pretty good.
In terms of scale, they're pretty close to that.
Yeah.
The Nickelodeon ones are a bit more streamlined, and the shapes are a bit different, sort of differ from the original comic book designs. But yeah, I was just amazed at the wide and variety sizes of mouses that we've got. So yeah, I guess my next step is to, you know, attempt to put some sort of a jaw articulation at the very least on them, get them opening and closing. But other than that,
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, come out pretty well.
Very good. All right. Well, that wraps this smaller news segment, and we're now going to head into our next topic.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
May the force be with you.
Wise man say, forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza.
As you can see.
It is time for our movie review of Deadpool 2, and we'll just call out now, because we are, and we always do attempt a G-rated show, so you can get your kids listening at home. For this next segment, just a warning that we probably will head into R-rated territory, so if you do have kids listening, maybe tune them out right now, and we'll put a advisory warning on the top of this podcast as well, just to keep you informed. So we're going to talk Deadpool 2, which dropped in cinemas here in Australia on, what was it, like Wednesday? Wednesday the 14th or so?
Thereabouts. I don't know dates.
Mid-month. I think I was talking to Jose Gonzalez. He said it was hitting the US on Friday.
Oh, okay.
The day that films open, we get them on Thursday in Australia. Their opening day is Friday.
Yeah. Well, it's strange because this came out on a Wednesday here,
it is strange.
Avengers Infinity.
Doesn't happen often. Usually it's mainly contained to a public holiday, like an Anzac Day or something. But yeah, it was strange. Wasn't even a midnight Wednesday, was it? No. It was during the day.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's most unusual.
Mm. But yeah, that's right. Our day is normally the Thursday. So we'll start off with a non-spoiler look at the movie. And we'll just touch quickly on our cinema experience. I know I had a very pleasant experience. I can talk to that quickly because Darren shouted us all here at Toy Power to the movies. So Frank already had, Ali had booked tickets, which was lovely. So, but Ben and I went along with Darren to the Salisbury Cinema, which was pretty packed. Like it was a good showing.
Yeah, it was a good showing. And some of the sessions either side of it, I noticed, were sold out.
Yep.
So people were going, which was good.
Yeah, it was a later session. It was probably, it's at my old man pinnacle of times to see a movie, which is starting at 9:30.
in the prime of the evening.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, your early evening, Darren.
Yes, that's right.
But we saw it in Salisbury. Beautiful recliners, top notch, great cinema experience. And it was great. Like, no talking really during, just a few like reactions, which are always good, and a bit of clapping.
Pretty respectful. It was good. I guess that time of night, given that the film only just dropped 2 days ago, you're still at that point where you got people that are seeing it for the first time, and mainly people that really badly wanted to see it. Yeah, yeah. So we were pretty fortunate in that regard. As Trent said, lovely recliner seating, and I'll just say this out as a plug to my local cinema: lovely recliner seating in all 8 cinemas screens. So if you're wanting somewhere comfortable to go, and don't want to pay gold class prices, you could do worse than Hoyt Salisbury.
Oh yeah, fantastic.
But same ticket prices everywhere else, but with the recliners.
I was trying to get my seat to recline, and I was hitting the button and wasn't reclining. I'm like, oh, I've got the dud. And then I realized I was pressing the wrong button. There was another button.
Yeah, there's two buttons. There's one, one to recline and one to...
I reckon I was pressing it for about 30 seconds, just going, come on.
Meanwhile, the person next to you is going up and down, up and down.
Pretty much. But, chair goes up, chair goes down.
Yeah, look, my experience, we went to Tea Tree Plaza, which my local one here at the moment is sort of undergoing renovation, so it was a little bit tricky to get into, but... really good, same sort of thing. Ours was probably about three quarters full. It was the 7:30 session, so you had people sort of going for dinner across the road and then walking over and stuff. Yeah, same as you guys, nothing really bad to report. We were sort of to one side, but it was the extreme screen, so it didn't feel like we were, you know, looking at it from an angle. And yeah, no, you know, no people rustling chips or anything crazy like that. And yeah, it was just the insane reactions for, you know, the chaos that unfolded.
Yes, we'll get to that in the spoiler section. But Ben, I think, screamed out like a small schoolgirl at one particular scene. I think I might have done exactly the same thing and had a bit of a trickle come out down below. But yeah, look, there were some great reactions from people. It was one of those films that I think Ryan Reynolds and the team are setting out to kind of shock you or do things that are unexpected.
Yeah.
And I think we broadly, Ben broadly called how a particular scene was going to play, a scene that we saw in the trailers, that the premise of how that was going to play out. And it played out pretty much as he picked.
Yes.
Which was pretty good, which we'll talk to in the spoiler section.
He could have wrote that scene, I reckon.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think,
where it was going.
I think so. So let's just do, I guess, a non-spoiler review. For those of you that... follow sort of Deadpool, you'll know the story, but essentially you've got the mercenary, the merc with the mouth, Wade Wilson, who sort of had a failed cancer treatment which gave him superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
Also sort of left him hideously deformed. So someone wrote Deadpool, I'm trying to see if I can find the reference, but before Ryan Reynolds actually played Deadpool, Deadpool refers to himself as a cross between Ryan Reynolds and a Shih Tzu.
Like in the comics?
Yeah, in the comics. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes, apparently. Apparently, okay. So I'll see if I can find
that. But, that probably makes sense.
Yeah. So this one sort of starts off with, I guess, an opening scene, which is kind of him doing his thing. So we kind of learn
actually,
where
he's... Yeah, it's actually reminiscent of the first movie, if you recall that. It just sort of throws you straight into the action, and then he's like... Hi, you're probably wondering how we got here. Well, let me take you back to 6 weeks ago or whatever it was. And then you sort of, get up to speed, basically. It's an intro that's designed to sort of shock and make you ask what the hell's going on. And then it's, as you've probably seen from the trailers and stuff, there are some additional characters that get sort of brought in. Look, we can probably speak to some of those without spoiling too much. The big one, of course, being Cable, played by Josh Brolin. Amazing. Like, this guy, I wouldn't put him on the level of Thanos in terms of how he resonates with the audience, but really well done. You know, it would have been interesting to see. I think there's even a point where he refers to him.
He calls him Thanos.
He calls him Thanos.
Yeah, that's right. There's a few moments of sort of the trailer sort of lying to you, but I think this is also the sort of movie that where they would have done multiple takes on, you know, witty one-liners and these sorts of things, and then gone, oh, we'll use this one in the trailer and use this one in the final cut. So, Domino was probably one of the other stands out as far as a character for me. I thought she was fantastic. And then there was a lot of the same guys from the first Deadpool movie in Colossus and... Let me see if I can get this right. Negasonic Teenage Warhead?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. I thought Josh Brolin did a wonderful job as Cable. I thought as well he looked really cool. Like, there were a couple of shots with him without a shirt on, and you could see sort of how the bionic arm integrated itself slowly into him, up his neck. And
well, it's actually, it comes from, it's a virus. It's actually a techno, if you go into the lore of it, it's a techno-organic virus that he has that slowly... turning his body into a machine. So that's why there's a scene where he kind of looks at it and just sort of, you know, tries to feel where, you know, he begins and the arm starts, kind of thing, and he's almost disgusted by it, I guess, really. So yeah, I thought that was a nice little, so you understood that, hey, this isn't something he had done in surgery willingly. without having to go into the full comic backstory of it. So, yeah, I liked it.
Mm.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more. Josh Brolin nailed it, I thought, as Cable, and showed his range because, you know, we do have, you know, you can't help but have Thanos in your head, you know, but yeah, I couldn't help but have to, you know, sort of almost remind myself that it was Thanos, and I thought the joke was certainly well placed, but yeah, it was a very different performance. You know, this guy's just on fire at the moment, I reckon.
Mm. Yeah. Very good. How did we think the other performances were in this film? Because it is a strange mix of, you know, breaking the fourth wall, making fun of itself, making fun of the genre, other things within it, like Deadpool 1 did, you know, a lot of references to Hugh Jackman and performances in Wolverine films.
I said to my wife at the start, I was like, Hugh Jackman cameo, got like that will get an amazing reaction. And then... it wasn't so much Hugh Jackman himself. Again, we're still trying to keep away from spoilers, but there was a Wolverine reference in the opening 5 minutes.
Yep. May even be toy related.
Yes, maybe very appropriate that we're talking about it on this show. Look, I thought that stuff was great. I really enjoyed the first Deadpool. So I went in expecting more of that sort of thing and wasn't disappointed. I sort of take it as a bit of a spoof or a bit of a parody of the genre. I know it has its more serious moments, but I sort of take it in that sort of context of what it is. And I think the genre is broad and robust enough now to be able to take that and be different things to different people. So, yeah, I was pretty good with that. I thought the performances were really good. I think Ryan Reynolds is, you know, we said it, I know... Ben and I said that when the first one came out, but he's born to play Deadpool.
Yeah, he embodies the character.
Yeah, there's no one else I can imagine in the role.
Yeah, I believe he's actually got a writing credit on this one.
He has, and a producing credit.
Oh, right, well, yeah.
I found some of the scenes that he had to do that were very non-Deadpool in character came across for me as a bit jarring. I can talk more to that in the spoiler section as to what those scenes were. Like, nothing wrong with the range, but I just felt maybe... It was a stark contrast to his character.
Okay.
And someone, I read a review that said something, he is a contradiction, which I felt, does it impact it that much? Not really.
Yeah.
I found probably in a minority here where I didn't necessarily love the first Deadpool film. Like, I enjoyed it. I'm not necessarily one... I'm not a big viewer for things like Robin Hood, Men in Tights, parodies of things. You know, like I like my film to be... If I want to see a Robin Hood film, I want to see a true portrayal of Robin Hood. I don't want to sort of necessarily see it being made fun of. So
you don't like joy. Okay, got it.
I do like laughing, but... It's my cinema preference.
Cool.
Having said that, I love the Naked Gun films.
Yes.
So I don't know. That's maybe I'm a contradiction.
Did they not invent the parody?
I just think they do it so well. Like, it is just absolutely brilliant. And maybe it's
Hot Shots was pretty awesome too. Back in the day.
Yes. Maybe it's because it's parodying something that I think deserves to be parodied. Superheroes probably does too, but police drama for sure. But having said that, I knew what to expect for this one. I just changed my mindset. And I think I enjoyed the second one more, maybe because of that, because I knew what to expect, which might be just a weird way to explain why I like this sort of one more than the other one. And if I went back now and watched Deadpool 1 again, I might have a more enjoyable experience in kind of knowing what to expect.
That makes sense to me.
And I found the first one, like, the humor was... I found it a bit cringeworthy in some scenes as well, knowing that there was like a 10-year-old kid sitting there. I'm like, some of the things that now your dad has to explain to you because of what was just said in that first one.
I have problems with people taking children to see a film like that. I don't blame the producers for that. I mean, it's an R-rated film. You know, I don't believe you should be taking children to see it. That's just... You know, I probably sound like an old-fashioned prude saying that. It's just my take at it. I don't think you can... I get what Trent's saying about that dad having to explain to his kid what jokes they just did or what that just meant, but there's part of me that thinks, yeah, that dad really needs to explain why he took his kid to see a Deadpool film. Maybe that's a controversial thing to say, and I don't mean to offend anyone when I say that, but
well, I guess we can ask our good mate Davey, because I'm pretty sure his boys went along to go.
Oh wow.
Oh dear.
Well, they're Davey's kids. Frank, can, so they've been exposed to that for
Frank,
a long time.
Frank, can we edit this before you?
The only time Davey sort of went, ooh, was when he's for book week, his kid wanted to go to book week dressed up as Deadpool. Yep. And that's where he just sort of went, he goes, I'm okay with, you know, my kid, my choice to go to the cinema. That's fine. All of a sudden, he's parading around in front of the whole school as Deadpool. Is this okay? But anyway, I'm not sure what happened with that. So it's interesting.
Yeah, it That's is all interesting. I'll say. It's interesting. And I shouldn't have said what I said, obviously.
No, it's just your opinion, mate. That's
yeah,
fine.
I guess it's more, I get sick and tired of people blaming the producers.
Yeah, no, that's
for,
fair.
You know, you've now got to explain this joke to a child. Well, actually, you don't. The alternative is you don't take the child.
Yeah.
That's probably more what it is than anything, because there's a target audience.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you decide that you're taking your child anyway, that's your call.
Yeah.
Or if you show up to them on home video or whatever, that's your call. But on the same token, I don't think the producers are, you know, the villains of the piece because they told an adult joke that they intended for a bunch of adults to hear.
Yeah. And it's just to speaking to that, when we're, and again, I feel like I'm name dropping Charles McFall style, but when we were in San Diego again, this was in the lead up to the first Deadpool coming out, saw Ryan Reynolds and Tim Miller and all the guys up on stage. And as they do at a lot of these panels, they have question time. Little kid, couldn't have been more than 10, 12 years old at best, goes up to the microphone to ask a question. And before he even gets through his question, Ryan Reynolds just stops him and goes, Hang on. How old are you? Oh, 10 years old. And he goes, and your parents are going to let you see this film, you know, based on the trailer that we'd seen already. And he's like, yeah. And there's just this silence, like, all right, how's he going to handle this? And he goes, your parents are fucking legends. Like, and that speaks A, to Ryan Reynolds as far as understanding, but B, also, you know, it depends on the kid and depends on the parents and all that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah. And, like, I would imagine Davey's kids would be fine with this film.
Yeah, I think that Davey's kids would be, and I think that's...
Even his two-year-old daughter, I think she'd
be. Yeah. But... yeah.
Well, one thing that probably surprised me about the film in general was there was a lot more, and this may be what you're alluding to, Trent, a lot more heart than was found in the first one. First one was very much a revenge story. This guy did this to me. I'm going to go kill him. Where's Francis, you know? This film, again, talking non-spoilery, there was a lot more of a story that people could connect to. You know, in a world where a guy can survive having his limbs cut off and all the rest of it, how do you relate to that? There was a much more human element to this film that I kind of wasn't expecting, because I was expecting anything but serious, I guess.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, definitely.
I couldn't agree more. I also thought there was a lot more, lot less humour in this one overall, or at least that's how it seemed to me. A lot more action in this one, and Trent and I talked about that.
Mm. Yeah, I definitely feel. I didn't look at the budget numbers, but I felt they had a bigger budget for this one. I know there was some talk that Ryan Reynolds didn't want to go too far. You know, the expectation that might create.
Yeah.
But I felt that in scenes maybe where they had to pad it out or fill it out in Deadpool 1. Because they didn't have the budget to do more action sequences, they relied more heavily, or there were longer moments of the comedy, or him chatting or things.
Yep.
Whereas in this, I think that the action was great. I think this had some sensational action sequences.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it had enough comedy that, you know, you felt you weren't let down.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think you're right with those ratios. I think expect, you know, more action, maybe a little bit less of that
comedy,
sitting around and having a chat type comedy. Any other thoughts before we wrap the non-spoiler section? Visual effects, more generally, do you think they all were pretty solid? I felt there were a couple that were a bit sort of miss, a bit, not a lot, just a few, and I'll talk to what they were in the spoiler section. But in typical Deadpool fashion and breaking the fourth wall, there's one scene where it is a CG-heavy scene, and Ryan Reynolds sort of calls it out for what it is.
Big CG fight.
And I thought, it's like, I had this thought in my head that's like, oh, that's funny, because in a way now my expectations are lowered for the CGI scene. And then like halfway through, and I'm like, wait a minute, they shouldn't be lower just because he said that. I want a better CGI scene here. but I thought that was very clever.
Called that out. Do we want to give it a quick score now or after spoilers
section? Give it a score now, I think. Start with you, Frank.
Look, I need a second viewing. If I had one complaint about it, it's that you're laughing so hard at the joke that's just happened, you miss the one that follows it shortly afterwards because you're so busy, you know, killing yourself laughing. Score. Look, I want to say 9 out of 10. To be honest, if the score marker for a movie is you come out of it feeling like you had a good time, 9 out of 10 for me, easy. What about you, Darren?
Yeah, I'm probably going to say about that too, I reckon. 8.5, 9. Ran that mark. Probably a 9. I had a good fun time with it. You know, yeah, I reckon. I'm like you, though. I often don't necessarily have a final grasp on things after one viewing.
Yeah.
But, you know, call it a preliminary score of 9.
Yep.
I'd go probably with a 7.5.
Oh, you're a hard.
And this film probably comes at a time where I've been to the cinema to see Ready Player One and followed by Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah, so the bar is high.
When you say, you know, you go into a cinema, I didn't notice time moving. I didn't think about anything else. I was fully immersed in both those pictures and the time just went like that. This one for me, like I said, the fact that it is very self-aware and the fact that it does break the fourth wall, it brings me out of the experience. That's just how I view it. I sort of feel like I'm watching people talk about making a film and making jokes about the...
Yeah.
And that just brings me out as a viewer. That's all. And I found it very hard to get involved. I thought some of the characterization was pretty poorly done.
I think that was pretty. I think one of the great things about Toy Power is that we do have a range of views rather than just a rubber stamp to everything. Yeah. You know, Ben also, and I know Ben couldn't be here tonight, but Ben also preferred the first one over the second one.
Yeah.
Mm. So there is a diversity of opinions out there on the topic and that, which is fine. I mean, there's going to be. I enjoyed it. I initially thought maybe I enjoyed the first one a bit more than the second one, but then I went away thinking about what I liked about the second one, so I'm not really sure. I need to see it again. But yeah, preliminary score is definitely 9. I think the performances were rich. I think, bringing Cable in added to it. This one's got a lot of heart to it, which I liked. It's got a tremendous amount going for it.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Mm-hmm.
Spoiler alert time.
Let's do it.
We'll get into some spoilers now because there is a lot of pretty incredible stuff that goes on here. How do we want to do this? Do we want to just talk to some of the scenes maybe first?
Do we want to start with like standout scenes or your favourite scene?
I think so, yeah.
Now for me, it's got to be... just recalling it now. It's got to be the baby legs. See, where he's just, you know, and what's brilliant about it is it's actually that moment that's the moment when Cable decides to, hey, we need to team up, and this is the reasons why. He tells him the backstory as to why he's trying to kill Russell, and you know, and Ryan, and you see in Ryan Reynolds' face that it's serious time. It's, hey, all right, you've got to give me 30 seconds to bring this kid around. And he goes up to him on these little, like, you know, 8-year-old legs, and he's standing, you know, 3 foot shorter than him, shaking his hand. And it's just, at first I was like, this is really odd. And I went, that's Deadpool right there. That's a heartfelt moment with just this underpinning of like, oh, you can't be serious, right? And even all the other characters, how they're looking around. The basic instinct moment, which was... just the fleeting glance where you just went, oh, are they going to do it? They did it.
There was something there. It wasn't a thumb.
So, yeah, that's my scene. Darren, what do you reckon? What was the standout scene for you?
Oh, gee. There's a few. I really liked... I guess we're in spoilers now, I guess.
Yeah, go for it.
I really found the early scene really moving where obviously and we are spoiling where he loses his partner. That for me was really, really heartfelt, and for me, I don't know the mythology of Deadpool as well as some people. That to me, that was unexpected. That was for me something that really I felt that, you know, as a viewer. You know, I'm a sensitive guy, and you know, when I'm whenever you see loss on the screen, you know, you can't help but feel it, particularly when it's a character that you've come to really, really like from the first film and that. So that one was a big one. I love the time travel stuff. Everyone knows I'm a bit of a time travel geek. I really loved that later on. I really loved how that was sort of, how some of these things were sort of rectified, for want of a better term. And I'm trying to be spoiler and non-spoiler, I guess, in case someone has gone past their spoiler warning.
Well, they won't get past my spoiler
warning. No. But yeah. So that were the standouts for me. But I also thought, you know, seeing Deadpool have that kind of loss but still care about saving that kid was really, you know, really profoundly moving part of the film for me. Trent talked about it having heart, and Frank talked about it having heart. For me, that was a big part of the heart. You know, he could have been this big pile of mess, you know, felt all this guilt that anyone would when they experience that kind of loss. And then he's still thinking about someone else, you know, and saving this kid, this, you know, saving Russell from becoming this thing. They're probably my standouts.
I love the X-Force team-up scene and the aeroplane.
Oh, that was fun, yeah.
And what followed. And I guess before we've seen the trailers and Peter, is Peter that has no superpowers, right? Yep. And they
just
obviously
thought it would be a cool thing to do.
Yeah, just thought it'd be cool. And in the way the trailer plays out is they have the interview sequence, and then Deadpool's like, "You're in," and it just cuts to him skydiving. And where Ben went to is like, "Oh, it's gonna be, wouldn't it be funny if he just goes basically splat?"
Yep.
Pretty much, like
Hulk style.
Yep. Yeah. It might have even been you that said that. And the scene, he didn't go splat, but the end result was the same. Everyone, pretty much except for the lucky domino, which I think was brilliant because she's like, "My superpower is that I'm lucky."
Yeah.
And Deadpool just doesn't believe it. And then as that scene plays out, you start to get a feeling for how
it's
not
very cinematic.
Yeah. And then, as he's saying it and the car's flipping and it's beautifully done. But just the way, when you could see what was going to happen with the wind and they were sort of flipping around and Shatterstar goes into a helicopter and like his hair is just left at the end. And I could just like, I knew how it was going to play out once the guy that does the vomit, the acid burning vomit, starts to go into the shredder. And then as Peter goes to help him, I'm like, "Here we go. This is how the vomit comes into it." And the invisible guy, what was he called?
The Vanisher. Did you see who that was?
No.
When he like gets the power, it's Brad Pitt.
Oh.
You're kidding.
Yeah. That's actually, my wife didn't pick it at the time. Right. It was Brad Pitt, and I looked it up. It is confirmed. Part of the joke with that is that originally Brad Pitt was in the running to be Deadpool himself.
Right.
And then couldn't do it for scheduling reasons. So, yeah.
That is funny.
And look, I must admit, the ending that Darren talked to with the time travel, once he gets the time travel device working again, he fixes up and saves Ness from the bullet. He then goes back and basically shoots a Deadpool version of himself from the Wolverine.
X-Men Origins.
X-Men Origins. Shoots himself dead. And then probably my favorite part of the film is it's Ryan Reynolds with the script of Green Lantern. And he's like, he's reading it to himself.
Yeah.
He's about to sign it and he's like, "Welcome to the big time." Like, and then it just blows him away. Like, but it's so, I found that so amusing because, you know, at the time, who wouldn't have wanted to play Green Lantern in a superhero film? Ryan Reynolds would have been in that belief of, "Here I am. I've made it.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
And then that film, I guess, how it was received and how he feels about it, and the jokes about, you know, in Deadpool 1, don't make it green, don't make it animated, when he's talking about his costume.
Suit, yeah.
was just great.
So, but yeah, who wouldn't? You're right, and I often think about it in the context of the timing as well. Who wouldn't want to be in the DC Comics adaptation from Warner Brothers that followed The Dark Knight?
Oh, of course.
Because that's what Green Lantern did. Yeah. You know, who wouldn't have... I don't see how you can fault anyone who signed on to Green Lantern for thinking, you know, that might well have been DC and Warner's time.
And who was the director on Green Lantern? It was someone...
Martin Campbell?
Yeah, well, he had some pretty serious
Golden
chops.
Golden Eye, didn't he? And was it Golden Eye and Casino Royale?
Yeah, I reckon it was Casino Royale.
Yeah, so, yeah, you can see on paper that would look like a, you know, a great thing to be part of.
Yeah, just on film it wasn't.
Yeah, I had its moments. It wasn't terrible, but yeah.
We're not here to talk about that movie.
No, we'll do that in our retrospective movie review.
Oh, we go back and review old movies.
Yes.
Oh, sorry, Davey. Bad luck.
Don't say that.
The other cameo I got to call out is the when he's in the mansion and he's like, "Oh, you think the studio would throw us a bone?" And then you just see the doors closing with Beast and I think there was Beast, Professor Xavier,
Quicksilver,
and Cyclops.
Yep. Yes,
they were the ones that I saw. I have to imagine that Jean Grey might have been in there, but she may not have been able to with Game of Thrones commitments, I assume. But
I was wondering just wondering if that scene was shot when they were shooting the, you know, the next X-Men film, you know, the Dark Phoenix.
Oh, good call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's when you'd have them all on set.
It could have easily been...
Yeah. It was cut in.
Green screened. Yeah. It would have to have been.
It looked like it was.
But. Yeah. That was just, brilliant. Because they apart from what he makes in this movie, there's jokes in the first movie going, "Where are all the rest of the X-Men? This is their home." Like,
how do you think there was a joke which... There were a few moments in this. This is that typical Family Guy style of joke where they push the joke and then they push it some more and then they keep pushing it. I felt they did that on a couple of occasions, and for me it was just like, it was like the trainee joke where he wears like an X-Men, trainee joke. And everyone was just saying trainee, and I reckon they did it about five or six times. And they even
called
back to it in the plane. And I'm just like, when they're in the plane, and he's like, "I was an X-Men." He's like, "Trainee." I'm like, it just went too far for me.
Yeah. Well, my issue reaches the point where it's no longer funny because you've already heard that joke.
Oh, I'd heard it like six times, and the other one was sort of the death sequence. And I'm like, they're just gonna keep doing this for about four or five times.
See, I didn't mind that because there's this moment when, you know, and he says a parting line and then just sort of stops moving, and the audience was literally holding their breath, going. Yeah. He's going to come back.
Yeah,
And then it comes back. And then he goes again. You're like, "Wait, is this one?" And then when he finally did, quote unquote, die, you know, you're almost going, nah, they're going to break. It's going to break any moment now. And then when it didn't, you're like, because they did push it and redo it, there's this bit where you go, "Oh, crap, is this for real?" So it had you guessing, I thought. But yes, I agree about the trainee one, because the one that really you talk about takes you out of the movie was Terry Crews' character saying it. Now, I get that Colossus and all the others, because they were there, and they're part of it.
He wasn't even there, was he?
Exactly. That's a bit, I just go, really? Yeah. Like, but anyway.
Yeah. But that, and look, and that's what you almost can't get upset by that, because it is the film, right?
Exactly.
So that is what you're signing on for, is that type of humor.
Yeah. Did anybody else, Juggernaut, thoughts on...
This was the scene that sort of I could hear Ben just go, "Oh!" when he ripped Deadpool in half. and it was one of those things that I guess you can do that to Deadpool because of his superpower of being able to heal. And then obviously it went to the leg scene as a result of him growing back his leg. So it was brilliantly done. But it was, again, like it was him coming out of the breaking the fourth wall and saying how much he loved Juggernaut. And I'm a bit in that boat. Like, I think just Juggernaut is visually an amazing character. I think when we finally saw Juggernaut on screen, I thought he looked really, really good for the first few moments. And then it was a case of the more I saw him, the worse he kind of got for me. To the final scene where I didn't... there were elements of the Colossus versus Juggernaut scene that I didn't mind. I found towards the end, Juggernaut just looks so CGI.
Yeah.
Particularly that scene where he got electrocuted up the buttocks. I'm like, that's the most CGI buttocks I've ever seen. And I've probably seen a lot of CGI buttocks in my time. Because there are a lot of actors that don't want their real buttocks on the
screen.
That's
why they have stunt doubles. Yeah. Isn't it?
Is it just me where he asks, I've just forgotten the name, strap him on.
Domino?
Yeah. Yep. Was it just me, or was that a reference to Empire with Chewie doing that? Because that's what I took from it.
I got that from the visuals when she was walking along with him strapped on.
I didn't pick that. That's a good one.
Yeah, but I just loved that.
What did we think of Russell? Like the, because he's actually, I don't know if you guys know much of his body of work, but he's
Hunt for the Wilder People.
Hunt for the Wilder People. He was also in another New Zealand movie called Boy. And I thought Russell was at his best when he was doing that awkward New Zealand humour.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, they're in the prison and he's talking about, oh, I'm going to make a shank and I'm going to find the biggest guy here and
yep.
make him my bitch and all this sorts of stuff. And
that was brilliant.
That was really good. When he turned into the I'm on the borderline of becoming a supervillain and got all angry and stuff, I was like, I didn't buy it.
No, didn't work for me at all. It was probably my biggest criticism. But I had really high hopes for him as a character and it fell flat for me. And I think to that point, I think when he had to act in a serious or aggressive or angry sort of portrayal of the character, I don't think he pulled it off.
Okay.
I think he pulled off those very
awkward
humor brilliantly, and I thought that was absolutely perfect. There were some pretty tough roles to play to try to convey that, and that was the bit thematically or character-wise that I just didn't feel. I mean, they showed a bit of the generic sort of, here's how the kids get tortured and, you know, they're wronged, and then that allows Deadpool to shoot one of them in the head by the kid just saying, he hurt me. You know, so he just shoots him dead in the street. That side of it just felt very generic and very lazy with how they sort of built that on, because that was the whole... The whole driver was him going after this headmaster who was essentially pure evil.
Well, the other thing with that, though, the name of that place, and this is a bit of an obscure one, was it the Essex Institute?
Yeah.
And that's actually a pseudonym, or not pseudonym, another name for Mr. Sinister, who was a big X-Men villain. Essex was like, it's kind of like Marvel's version of you know, Luther Corp. Or Lex Corp, sorry. Yeah. And so the minute I heard that, I just went, well, they're the bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, that's, as someone who knows that, that's all I needed to hear. But you're right, the rest of it sounded a bit... But, you know, who's going to sit there and question, you know, someone who tortures kids, to be honest?
Maybe that's why. It didn't build up the believability for me. Maybe they just needed a bit more. Maybe it doesn't matter who really cares.
Yeah,
he's the bad guy. You know, he does bad things to kids, you know. But yeah, and in that scene where they're trying to protect, you know, let's protect Russell from having to make a decision to kill someone so we can preserve his integrity and he won't turn evil.
Yet
they're all just like hacking up pretty much anyone they can.
Even Dirk Pinder just finally kills someone and he's just like, yes.
Yep. And that's all fine. But because they've looked into the future and Russell turns bad, that's the one we can't expose this kind of violence to. And again, look, it's nothing you can pick too hard at because the whole, it's sort of the whole premise.
I don't know. I had any other thoughts.
I do.
I'm going through my notes at the moment.
Just quickly to reiterate some of the points Ben made to me. He just loved Domino. And I think... I thought she was a really cool character. I thought her superpower worked really well for the film. There were some pretty grotesque sort of finishing moves on some of the characters, like that guy that kind of had he was decapitated by the falling
cabinet.
It was like all the things that could go wrong for them. And I thought that was just really quite clever in the way it was done.
And it wasn't just a case of her standing there and random things happening around her. She was still punching people and shooting, and she was an action star essentially, but then it was, you know, when one guy that she kills falls over, they push something out that trips up the guy who's running into her left, kind of thing. Like it was just so well done.
Very clever. And I love the scene that followed the sort of the parachuting in scene, which was the assault on the armored vehicle. I thought that was really well done, and some really nice action sequences, and the characters felt like they were in real danger, and there was real impact and all of that. And anyway, to call out what sort of Ben said, he just loved the Domino character, thought she played it really well, and was just an interesting character to bring in. And that was probably reflected some of my thoughts that of the new characters, the ones that stood out for me were Cable and Domino.
Definitely.
Yep. Any other thoughts? We are sort of running a little bit over time, but
I guess I'd just say, and it's going to be controversial, as much as I do enjoy the Deadpool films and Logan, for me, my favourite in the 20th Century Fox X-Men universe is still X-Men Days of Future Past. That's controversial, yeah. I know.
No, but, I'd be up there with you on that one.
Yeah, it's just, for me, that's hard to top. It was just such an ambitious film, so much to it, and so easy to get wrong. But I think it's not only one of my favourite Marvel films, it's one of my favourite films.
Good call. Yep. Do we think this means there will be a Deadpool 3?
Ryan Reynolds himself has come out and just sort of gone, I don't know, really. So whether the, and I guess part of that is to do with this Fox-Disney buyout thing. I guess the whole X franchise, if you will, is sort of got a big question mark hanging over it.
Yeah, it's all in Fox right now.
Yeah. And what that reminds me of another thing that, and this is another case of trailers telling lies a little bit. In the trailers, there's a conversation between, and I forget his character's name, but TJ Miller and Deadpool, basically saying, oh, yeah, you never go and do a third because by the time you get to stop at two, like two's a good, and that's really cool sort of, you know, self-referential again. That's not in it. So I kind of felt like TJ Miller himself was a little bit neutered in this whole movie. Like I feel like a lot of his scenes were cut or he just wasn't in it.
I don't think he didn't have a very impactful role for me.
Yeah.
He was fine like in the scenes, but it almost had that torture scene. It was pretty funny how it played out.
Yeah.
But it had to me a very Saturday Night Live sort of vibe to it. It was again. The comedy probably played out more so than the acting performance for me, but that's just my take on it. All right, on that note, we will wrap this episode of Toy Power. Thank you so much for your company today, and we'd like to make a special thank out to
thank out.
Can you thank out time?
Thank out all of you.
We got a new segment, the thank out.
The thank out. That's what we're calling it from now on.
Okay. Special thanks to our awesome patrons, and these patrons are Lux Toy Collector, Jose Gonzalez, Brett G, and Chris Wisdom.
And we do not want to thank any of them out.
No. No, please don't.
We want to thank them in.
Yes. Stay in the Toy Power fan community. On that note, we'll say a big thank you and see you around the toy aisles.
And until next time, good journey, one and all.
You can find the Toy Power team at all the usual online places. Facebook.com/Toy Power Podcast. At Toy Power Podcast on both Twitter and Instagram. Or have your say and email us, toypowerpodcast@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on both iTunes and Stitcher, and please leave us a review. Otherwise, we just assume we're awesome.
We are a proud member of the Giant Size Team Up Network. Check out all the awesome shows on this awesome network full of okay people. Want to learn more? Go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com, where you can find us and a whole lot more awesome shows. Well, they're not more awesome than us, but they're...